Why does Danny not have a shirt on and he's petting the cat real weird? And I was just like, what?
I was blessed. And I would read him bedtime stories. I would make up stories about the blue sock and the red sock. And they would go on adventures together. And he'd say, Marky, tell me a blue sock story.
Everybody, welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Laura Wexler.
I'm Jessica Henkin, and this week on the podcast, love sucks, does it? Well, in this episode of the podcast,
it really does.
Two stories of love affairs gone really wrong.
Before we get to all the heartbreak and sorrow and lies and cheating, we want to thank Park School of Baltimore, independent K through 12 progressive school in North Baltimore. Okay,
this so first storyteller, she is a powerhouse.
She is a pip.
Jen
she is a maven.
Yes.
She is a raconteuse. This Jen Marsh.
She is Baltimore famous in the biggest way.
Yeah. So she has been in town for a while doing so many different things.
She founded Baltimore. She created
Baltimore. Wow. It did not exist before her. She has worked at the city paper. She sells houses. She's worked at numerous really fun bars.
Yeah.
And
she's a good time gal.
She really is.
Yeah.
She really is. And this story is, it's just one of those stories where it's just a pleasure.
Yeah.
Everything about it is pleasurable. So take a listen.
Yeah. So I had been dating this guy kind of on and off for about 3 years, and things got a little hot and heavy like last February. And then mid-May of last year, he kind of moves in with me. And I was like, are you living with me now? And he's like, yeah. So I was like, okay. You know, so I have, you know, I'm a professional merger. That's just what happens. So, you know, at that point, I also had a kitten and a very, very, very kitten named Geronimo, and I call her Momo, and a very, very fat cat named Betty. And Betty is old and fat. That's all I can say about her at this point. So in the meantime, I have this also like modern family situation where my ex children are involved, and he asked me to go to Deep Creek with the whole family, including his parents and his girlfriend. So I said to Danny, the names have been changed to protect the not so innocent. I said, you know, is this cool? And he was like, oh yeah, that's cool. Like, when are you coming home? When are you coming home? And I was like, I don't know, you know? So he's like, yeah, yeah, go, go. And so I was like, okay. So I'm driving out to Deep Creek and I'm, you know, having a blast because it's kind of my happy place. And we go, we're hanging out, we eat dinner and we go play miniature golf. And, I ended up taking pictures of the boys next to the sign that said hot nuts. So they were all like, I got to see my pictures, got to see my pictures. So we get back to the house and Ian, sweet baby angel Ian, who's 11, takes my phone and he starts kind of looking through the pictures and laughing. And then so I'm in, you know, a room full of people here. And then I hear him say, I'm going to dial into the security, like I'm going to go see what Momo's doing. So I have a security camera in my kitchen that's hiding in plain sight. It's been there for 10 years. I kind of forget it's even there. It's kind of trained on my back door. And that's not a euphemism. So anyway, you know, it's there. So he's like, Momo, Momo. He dials in and gets my security camera. And then there's dead silence. And then he announces, why does Danny not have a shirt on and he's petting the cat real weird? And I was just like, what? So I make a beeline across that room and I was just like, oh my God. So I get my phone and this is the scene that's going on in my kitchen. There's a camera here and a table and then a big brown round mound. And he's doing this with no clothes on. And I was like, oh, my God, he's fucking my cat. And I was like, Betty, oh, my God. And so with that, it's a whole new level of throw up, by the way. I just kind of want to put that out there. So I start recording it because I'm kind of like, I'm going to go home and be like, why were you fucking my cat? And he's going to be like, you're crazy. I wasn't doing any of that. And she can't talk and defend herself. You know, so I was just kind of like, oh, my God. So anyway, he's just going to town, having a great time. And up pops a naked lady. So I literally was like, wow, I'm so glad that he was not fucking Betty. But then the rage happened. And they were on, I only have one camera in my house, and they were in this frame. And with that, you know, merriment was going on in the kitchen, both nude. And with that, they walk off camera. So I know they're going up to my room to have sex. So since I have my alarm right in my hand, I'm like, one Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi, boing, set the alarm off. And it sounds like somebody is killing an alien, okay? So all of a sudden, you know, again, I'm just picturing, because all of a sudden the alarm gets taken off, because I can't see anything, but I can see the alarm obviously being taken off. So then I was like, ha, ha, ha. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi. Bing. Set it off again. So in between my absolute, I don't even remember what I was texting, but like, probably get your shit and get out of my house, blah, blah, blah. He must have seen the text message, because then he goes upstairs to the woman. And then I have to kind of give you a little thing there. She popped up on his phone like 3 weeks prior, and I friended her on Facebook. So basically we had a couple friends in common. So I thought that was weird. And what's going on there? But I didn't think too much of it. And, basically I texted her, "You are a piece of trash. My 11-year-old found you, and I have a video of what you were doing in my kitchen. I hope you're proud." You know, so basically, she freaked out because she didn't know about me. I didn't know about her. And that's how vile, disgusting this person was. And it's funny, because the next day I was walking around Falling Water trying to pretend like nothing was wrong. And we were comparing dates and whatnot. But it basically was just kind of like, it just struck me as how crazy it was that the universe let me see this moment, because it felt like it was 10 hours long, but it was really only maybe a minute and a half. And if Ian had chimed in 30 seconds before or 30 seconds after, nothing would have been there. It would have been an empty kitchen, you know, and I would have probably gone home and probably would have been like, "How was your Saturday night?" And he would have been like, "It was horrible." And then I was like, "Oh, let's have steak," you know, and you know, I would have known. And well, and then one of the things that he also told her was that he was house sitting for an older woman. And I was like, oh, no. Oh, no. And she was in New York for a couple months. So I think he was also planning on bringing her back several times to my house while I wasn't there. So it's just, again, one thing to show you. Betty is fine. She was sitting next to me while I was practicing today, and she has no idea what even I thought was happening. But it just goes to show you the universe is your friend and really lets you see what you need to see, so you know you don't continue going down that path. So thank you.
I mean, poor cat. I mean, just like her thinking
I
about
love this. I love this story about the cat being okay. Betty, you're okay. But just also the sort of, what are the chances that the very moment the boy is going to look on her security camera.
She was supposed to see that.
Yeah.
That was supposed
to all happen.
I know.
And, you know, it got me just thinking about all these sort of surveillance things. And, like, you know, there's those doorbell. There's something called, I don't know what they are, but they're like cameras that you have that are in your doorbell or on your front door, so you can watch people who are stealing your packages or something from Amazon.
Yeah.
But all the weird stuff that has been captured on that. Mm-hmm. And then I remember when we had one of those video baby monitors, you could pick up other people like nearby when we lived in a row house. All these just like strange things that we're seeing that we wouldn't see without the benefit of technology. Like she says, if he hadn't gotten the phone at that point and turned on the camera to see Betty, never would have known. So
they'd still be living together blissfully.
The moral of the story is you should always be surveilling.
Yeah. Always
really
be
should.
Watching. Yeah.
Yes. Before we get on to our next Love Sucks story for this week, we want to thank Baltimore Magazine. You can find them at baltimoremagazine.com on the newsstand, and you can check out their local flavor live podcast.
We also want to thank Golden West, which is a restaurant in Hamden with a vegan forward menu. Very fun place to go. Been around since 1997. This next storyteller is Mark Unger. He is originally from Baltimore. He lived in LA for a number of years. He's an actor and a comedian. He owns McCoobie's Joke House with his brother. He had an Amazon Prime show.
Yes, called Thespian, which you can check out on Amazon Prime or just Google Mark. And this is a story he shared years ago. This is a deep cut from our archive. And it's a really beautiful story. For a stand-up comedian, it's a not funny story that is truly moving.
Well, most of them are very sad people.
Yeah, it's true.
Take a listen.
I was living in L.A., and I hated L.A. I hated every second that I was in L.A. I hated the fact that it never rained, that there's no weather. People just go there, and they're soulless and dead. 25, they're dead. It's just horrible. So I came back, and also I had dated a lot of models and actresses, and they were they were lunatics. I mean, absolute. I dated a woman on our first date. She brought a book called The Art of Happiness. If you need a book to tell you how to be happy, you're not a good sandwich maker, you know? I just knew this wasn't going to work out. So I left, and I came back to Baltimore, and my plan was to only be here for a little while to make a film that I wanted to make, a short film. And I fell in love. At a gym. I was at the gym and she walked past and we started to talk and one thing led to another and we were in love, very in love, incredibly in love. She was amazing to me. And you have to know also that I've always had a core belief, my core philosophy has always been that every moment in your life leads to the moment that you just had. So if your life didn't unfold exactly the way it did, you would cease to exist. And so if you look at yourself and you like who you see, you have to accept the good and the bad. So I meet this woman. And she has a child, about a year and a half. And she's Ukrainian. And the child doesn't have a father, or he does, and he's somewhere in the Ukraine, and nobody knows where he is or who he is. And I look at this little boy, and he looks at me, and we start to bond. And we all live together as a happy family. Ilya. This little boy's name. And he calls me Papa Markey. Papa Markey. And I take baths with him. You don't take baths with a kid unless you're committed. Take baths with this kid. And I get mad at him because his cars are all over the bathtub. And I have to buy him cars every day. And there's just cars everywhere. And he's the most adorable, wonderful, loving child. I was blessed. And I would read him bedtime stories. I would make up stories about the blue sock and the red sock. And they would go on adventures together. And he'd say, Marky, tell me the blue sock story. And we'd watch cartoons together. I was so excited. I bought him, somehow I found on eBay a DVD of Magilla Gorilla. And I got this for him. And it was like the greatest. I don't even think he liked it, but I loved Magilla Gorilla. So he had no choice. He had to like Magilla Gorilla. He was my son. He was my son. And I remember I was on the deck. I was barbecuing. And he would call fire Gorn or something. It's, I guess, Russian. He would say, Marky Gorn. And I was looking at him and I was looking at her. And I started to cry because I couldn't believe that my life had turned out so wonderfully. That all the mistakes I'd made and all the things that had happened in my life, whatever they had been, whatever they were, had led me to them. And it was perfect. I guess about a year into the relationship, or around a year, she started to change, or I noticed the change. I think the change happened long before. She was distant. It was like somebody had taken over her body, like she wasn't the same person that I fell in love with, and I'm giving baths to a child, and she's being dismissive, and she's on line all the time, and photoshopping pictures of herself, and I'm trying to be a father, and a husband, and a lover, and a friend, and she's disappearing, And it gets worse and worse. And finally, one day, when she comes home 3 hours late, I explode. But I explode in the way you explode when you love somebody and you're scared and you want things to be better. And she looks at me and she says, I'm done. And she meant it, that she was done. And I, what? There's a child, I'm Papa Mark, what? And a week or two later, people came into my house, our home, and took everything, basically, everything. Pictures off the walls, toys, cleaning products, cleaning products, everything. And it was horrifying. And she told me that I should treat it like a divorce, that I could see him whenever I wanted to. And then she made that next to impossible, and then eventually impossible. And I drank a lot. I drank every night. Every night. I had to. Because I was living in that place with ghosts. And I couldn't take a bath because that bathtub was where I gave him baths. And I just drank, and there was a bar I would go to. And there was just men lined up at this place. Each one of them in pain, whether they caused it themselves or they bore the brunt of some woman's wrath, whatever it was, they were in pain, and I drank with them every night. I mean, this was the kind of place that should come with its own cemetery. It was that kind of a bar. It was Christmas Eve. I had certain places I could go to. I could only go to those places in certain routes, because I was afraid of the memories and the thoughts and things that would come up. And this particular night, I went to a place I never went to, really. But I was there this one night because my place, one of my places, was closed. And it was Christmas Eve. And I had said to her, on Ilya's birthday, the second birthday I spent with him, I remember saying to her, I love the fact that we're doing things for a second time. And this would have been our second Christmas. And I'm sitting there drinking, and I had gained weight. I wasn't working out. It was horrible. And the memories, the thoughts, the nightmares, every night. And I see a head bob up and down. I'm in the bar. There's a glass booth. I see a head. Don't go look. Don't do it, Mark. Don't do it. But of course I go. And there is Ilya and this woman. And I call out to him, Ilya! And he turns, and this is 4 months since I had seen him. And he goes, my Marty! My Marty! And he comes running up to me. And he won't let go. And she's trying to be polite at first, but she's cold. This is my family, and she's cold. And he says, Marky, come play with me. Play with me. She looks at me at one point, and with anger in her eyes, you have to leave now. You have to understand, when I talk about this, I feel like every one of you must be thinking, what did you do to her, Mark? And I didn't do anything to her except love her and him. And she made me go away, and I left. And 3 days later, on a back road, driving my little sports car that I bought in L.A., I was going too fast. I had a little too much to drink. I hit a light pole. I don't know that it was an accident to this day. I know that there was blood all over me. Ambulance came. I ended up in an emergency room. At 4 o'clock in the morning, I came back to that cold place by myself, my head bandaged. I slept in the room that had been Ilya's room. That's where I moved my bed, was up there. And I looked at the wall and I saw nails where his Curious George picture was that I had bought for him. Because every moment in your life leads to the moment that you just had. And if you want to exist, if you like who you are, that's great. But if you don't, it's the worst philosophy ever. 8 months ago, I was at a baseball game with this woman, Maria, Maria. She lives with me now. We live together, and we have a little dog, Rupert. And I still think about Ilya every day, but I am more in love and happier than I've ever been in my life. Thank you.
I want to say that Mark, in general, is not a very sad person overall.
Yeah,
in this,
but this
case, he was.
I think about a breakup being hard, but a breakup where you lose a child, too, because it was the child that came with the lover. I mean, just like knife in the heart, just again and again and again.
But he's good now. He's married.
Yeah,
happy.
He's good, and he tells us that, you know, it ends well, but that is a particular kind of pain. It really is. So thank you for joining us today for Love Sucks.
When you're dealing with your own Love Sucks scenario, it helps and doesn't help to get some wine or beer. And you can do so at
it
the
may
wine
help.
Source. It doesn't. In the long term, we all know
don't blame
it doesn't.
Us if it doesn't, though.
But it's a nice temporary
fix.
Yeah.
All right. And you can find us at stoopstorytelling.com. Check out our upcoming events. You can leave us a review wherever you get your podcast. And we want to thank Maureen Harvey, who doesn't suck.
Oh, my God, no.
She does not. She is against.
And she's soon going to be in, let's see, it's February,
she's
March,
gonna get
April,
married.
May, June. Yeah.
And their love does not suck.
No, but not right now. But
yeah,
it's all downhill
gonna happen,
from there.
Anyway, okay. We'll see you next week.